You're not gonna say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about Toontown. Let's talk about Bumwine. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony?
Hey everybody, welcome to another one of these. It's been a little while since we've been in the studio, as I call it. The studio. Well, it's the Christmas season. You know, I was having a discussion with Poon Master Flex. I think she hates that I bring these things up because I don't feel like any... I feel like no... not a normal person. And so then I bring it up to her because I'm like, will you validate that I'm normal? And she has to kind of be like, you're not normal. And I'm tired of telling you that. Because we were talking about this whole, you know, the war on Christmas and Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and all that shit. And I was just kind of like, I mean, I don't like Christmas. I don't think this is a big secret to anybody. Would I say that I hate Christmas? Would I go that far? Yes, easily. But it doesn't bother me when people say Merry Christmas, when people wish me Merry Christmas from the bottom of their heart. It's because this is how I feel. If somebody were to say like Happy Hanukkah, I would not care. I'd be like, great. I don't care. I don't care if they think I celebrate Hanukkah. I don't care, you know. I guess I just generally believe that people are like not trying to assault me with their well wishes, or not trying to test me and see how I feel about them. So we're talking about this, right? And she's kind of like, well, you know, people don't feel that way. Some people, you know, if you celebrated Kwanzaa and everything around you is Christmas, you might feel differently. And I was like, I do feel differently because everything around me is Christmas and I don't fucking care about... I would happily go without Christmas. And so we're in the middle of this discussion and we went out for her birthday and we were in Fort Collins and we're just kind of walking around, right? Headed towards Old Town. This fucking guy comes running out of nowhere and he hands me this stocking, you know, like a hung by the chimney with care kind of stocking. And he's like, you look like you guys are, you know, into Christmas. Merry Christmas. And I was like, oh, thank you. And he's like, yes, have a good Christmas. He was very into telling us Merry Christmas. You know, this was not a well-to-do... Here's what I picture when I picture, you know, I picture fucking Bill O'Reilly, right? When it's somebody who's like very insistent on Merry Christmas and like, fuck this Happy Holidays bullshit. This was basically the polar opposite of Bill O'Reilly, other than it was a dude. And he gets in this fucking car that, you know, looks like it... If he was driving it and the entire undercarriage just burst into flames, it would not surprise me. And he gives us this stocking, runs back in his car, drives away. And, you know, I'm starting to examine, you know, there's something in the stocking. It's very heavy. And, you know, I was just like, what the fuck, you know? But I was like, well, I gotta know what's in there. Did it cross my mind that it's like, I didn't think something like, you know, is this going to be like a harmful bomb or something like that? I just was more like, did this guy just like take a dump in here or something? Like, what is this? It was very strange. So I start opening the stocking and I pull out, it's a coffee mug, like a huge coffee mug that looks like it has not been washed, not since the last time it's been used, but possibly ever. Now, Why is this happening? What is this? Why was this put in the stocking? And, you know, as soon as I pull it out, there's a distinct odor coming from the stocking that I can only describe as like, you know how at the thrift store, it seems they're using some kind of detergent there and the whole store smells like thrift store. It was kind of like that, but it was really strong, and we were outside. And then as I pull the coffee mug out, and it's clearly, it's got, I'm not saying it's like dirty, I'm saying it has coffee remnants in it, and like drips of coffee down the side, like, you know, somebody drinks a coffee cup and it'll drip down the side. And then the stocking itself also was clearly quite dirty. Like, I started noticing, like, this stocking looks like it's been in the gutter. And so we're kind of looking at it, and I hadn't really said much yet. And the dude, like, drives past us on the street, you know, that we're walking along, and kind of gives us this nod and a wave, like, Merry Christmas, you know? And we're like, okay, thanks. And then I just threw it away. What? It was so weird in and of itself, but also weird because I was like, I don't normally feel assaulted by Christmas, and then I was assaulted by Christmas. I was just like, what is this? And, you know, how do you say that you were assaulted by Christmas when you're like, someone gave you a gift, and you're like, I don't know, maybe that's like, that's the best he could do. But I was kind of like, I don't know. It was really odd, right? It was an odd encounter, and not something I expected. How about that? Can we just kind of leave it at that? But so I guess now I've been assaulted by Christmas. If this is how it feels, if basically, you know, someone says Merry Christmas to you and you're like, I celebrate Hanukkah. And so if when someone says Merry Christmas to you, it feels like a not an assault, but sort of someone inflicting this gift on you that is well-intentioned, but you do not want. You know, that I understand. I understand why you wouldn't want it. So then we go to Huhat Mongolian Barbecue, which is like, I realized later, I was kind of like, this is a buffet, isn't it? Like, they've just disguised this. Although I think they figured out the key to the buffet, which the problem with the buffet, other than the food is just terrible, is that it's been cooked like 5 hours ago. So what they're doing is, like, we put the raw ingredients out, you fucking put them in a bowl, and then you come over and you cook them, right? And it was like, this is always an embarrassing experience for me, because I can cook. I know how to cook things. I know how to make things, you know, and there are some things I can just make by heart, which are almost entirely things that are probably terrible for my heart. And then, that, you know, if there's a recipe, I can pretty much follow along, right? But for some reason, when I get in this buffet Mongolian barbecue situation, I'm like, I lose all sense of, you know, I have like a weird food vertigo, and I don't know what to do. And so then I put stuff in the bowl, but I'm like, I think I did not put the right ratio of stuff in the bowl. And, you know, so then we get to the end of the thing, and I'm like, holy shit, I did not put enough stuff in this bowl. Like, my bowl was not very full, because I don't know. I guess I was expecting to run into other ingredients or something, and that I would get to the end and be like, oh, shit, this is the perfect thing. I want it. And then it's also weird because I feel weird about, like, one thing that sucks about a buffet, okay, even this buffet, you know, okay, I got broccoli. And I'm trying to pick up broccoli with, like, some kind of tongs or something. But the broccoli tray is very full, so it's, like, falling into the neighboring trays. And I just feel bad about that. Because I'm like, man, if someone really hates broccoli, they're going to be like, you motherfucker. You know, but I'm like, what can I do? I wish it came out of, like a gumball machine in the bottom of the table. You know, so then I would only get it. It would have no way to get in the other stuff. And then, you know, I get to the thing, and you put your food on this, like, big round cooking platform. It's like a griddle, but it's round, and there's, like, three people cooking, and they just have, you know, they throw your bowl in kind of a vertical line onto the, a line that goes across the griddle. And, you know, so they've got their, it's like they're doing giant lines of Coke, right? And so they put my line of Coke and then someone else's and they cook it. What a horrible analogy. 'Cause you know how you cook cocaine on a giant griddle? So, you're standing there, and it's like, imagine a sundial, except the little notches in it are piles of food. And one of them is my shitty pile of food. And so we're going around, you know, and we're waiting. And I was talking to Poon Master Flex, and I was like, do you think they, like, judge what people have put on, you know, like, someone brings up a bowl, and they're like, what the fuck? And she was like, oh, yeah. Because I know, I mean, it's probably, you would probably get bored, right? And what else would you have to do? I would like to know the famous ones, you know, like, that they're, like, still talking about to this day. They're like, can you believe that guy just brought up a bowl full of sauce? What did he expect us to do? You know, and then, so you're supposed to put sauce in it, too, and they're like, I didn't realize till I got to the cooking part, because they put mine on there, and I was like, mine looks a lot drier than everyone else's. And then I was like, well, maybe everyone overdid it. But there's, like, things everywhere that say, you know, put, like, 4 to 5 ladles of sauce. And I probably did, like, 2.5. Because I was like, that seems like a good amount. I don't know. Completely screwed it up. We get back to the table, and Poon Master Flex is like, what? Why didn't you get more food? You know? And I was like, I don't know. And she was like, well, yours doesn't look, you know, it looks kind of like weirdly almost burnt or something. And I was like, I know. I fucked up, okay? I fucked up. But apparently you can go back more than once, which is what I did. And I feel like I got almost the same thing the second time, which I was also kind of disappointed in myself in. But I was sort of like, I was like, no, I want to get it right this time. And I feel like I got it righter. I don't know if it was right, but it was better, right? I guess I just, I don't know. I feared the judgment and wanted to do it right. Wanted to get it all good. After that, I nearly died. I nearly passed away. Because it was Poon Master Flex's birthday. And one of the things we did as like a little activity is we went to a cat shelter, a cat rescue in Fort Collins, because the bookstore where I volunteer has a bulletin board. And this month, the cat rescue, you know, has claimed the bulletin board. And they have, like, a little shopping list that's like, here's stuff we need. And it's just supplies, like dish soap, garbage bags, whatever. And I was like, oh, maybe it would be fun for Poon Master Flex, and she's a cat lover. We can, like, go to Target, get all this stuff, and take it over there. And so this whole time we're planning this, she's like, yeah, let's do that, you know? And she's like, and then we can pet the kitties. And I was like, is this how this works? Because I have never, unless I did it when I was, like, 2 years old and we got our first cats at, like, my dad's house, I've never gone to a shelter to adopt an animal because I've never had a pet of my own. And the only pet we really had at my mom's house was a cat that was our neighbor's cat who just started living with us because my grandma let it inside and seemed to prefer living at our house. And eventually, you know, the neighbors moved and they just had this awkward conversation like, well, I guess you can keep the cat. And I think we were all kind of like, yeah, no fucking shit. You know, I think the thing was they had two cats, so the one cat was like, fuck you. So anyway, the only time I went to a shelter that I can really remember was because I had a friend who, they got a cat, and, you know, this cat was not working out for whatever reason. I don't really know why. I didn't really remember exactly what was going on, but I just remember, you know, they were like, taking it back to the Humane Society or the shelter or whatever in a box. And they were like discussing it and like, you know, it was a lot of like, I just don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can face it. And I was like, I'll do it. And his mom was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, all right. And so we went right then. I took the box in and was like, here, this is like a, I don't remember what I said. Like, this is a return. Oh, hang on a second. You know, returns department, please. And they kind of looked at me like, you know, what's wrong with the cat? And I was like, I don't know, man. It's not my cat. You know, I'm bringing it in for another family or something. And I was probably like 14 or 15. So I guess they were just like, well, whatever. What are you going to do? So I dropped off a cat once, hopefully not to its doom. But who's to say? But, you know, what are you going to do? So anyway, we purchased a bunch of items at Target and we headed over to the cat shelter. And we get to the cat shelter and then, you know, drop all the shit off. And then the lady working there is like, thanks, you know? And Cassie says, can we see the kitties? And she's like, oh, yeah, of course, you know? You probably want to see some of the, I don't know, fruits of your labor. I don't know what to call it. That's not creepy, but there you go. And so we go in the little room next door, and, you know, it's, there's like probably a dozen cats in there, right? You know, in little cages and stuff. And then they all have cards on it that are like, I can come out, or I can come out, but not if other cats are out. You know, I'm new, so don't let me out. And she's just like showing us the language of these cards and stuff. And so, you know, we're hanging out in there, and she's like holding a cat, a little like a kitten that was very playful and shit. And I was kind of looking at these other cats. You know, they had one that was Herbie the Love Bug, who had feline AIDS. And I was like, poor Herbie. You know, Herbie was just sleeping. And then, all kinds of fucking cats, right? So we leave. And on the way out, I pick up this little newspaper. It's called The Cat's Meow. They are, it's volume 26. So I don't know if that means, you know, usually they have issue whatever volume 26, but it's fine. I'll just assume this is the 26th one they've done. And I pick it up because on the front page, there's this cute little kitten. And it says, our promise to chirp fulfilled. And I was like, who's Chirp, you know? And so he looks very small, but it turns out he's a senior cat. And I start reading the story, and I was just like, I do not want to read this. But now I'm compelled. Right? Because he's a little one-eye cat, so you can see his eyes gone. And then you're reading it, and it turns out you're like, okay, so these people moved out of their house, and they just left, like, three cats. They just abandoned them, right? Outside. And then they're like, this cat had, like, a ruptured eye and missing teeth and, you know, all this shit. And then so they get him, and they, you know, they had to remove his eye and take some of his teeth out and stuff. And then it took him 2 years to be adopted from the shelter, because this is like a no-kill shelter. And so it took 2 years, though, because he also, you know, it just like lists all this shit. It's like he had chronic kidney disease, and he was in renal failure, and he tested feline AIDS positive, and he had a heart murmur. And you're like, Jesus fucking Christ. You know, and then it took 2 years, but eventually he was adopted. So it worked out. But now I've got this thing, this newsletter sitting around in my apartment with this sad little kitty on it. You know, that I'm like, man, he spent 2 years of his life in this this thing. That's terrible. And, you know, but hopefully Chirp's doing well. So, you know, this show is dedicated to little Chirp. So we go home, and about halfway home, I start, you know, sneezing and stuff like that. And about an hour after we're home, I'm in like a full-blown, you know, cold, flu, sinus, stuffy head, sneezing so you can rest medicine kind of situation. Like, I am dying. And I just feel like shit. I have a fever, you know, and I was like, oh my God. I don't know if this was the cats or, you know, just illness, but I'm going to take a shower because, you know, get the shit off me and then see how I feel. I sat down in the shower because I was, like, lightheaded. And then I felt like garbage the rest of the night. Like, I went to bed at 9:30 p.m., which is, for me, ridiculously early, right? That's, like, a good 4 hours early on an average night. And so then I woke up the next morning and I felt fine. So is Pete still allergic to cats in general? Yes. Does he seem to suffer allergies from Diesel? No. Is he currently a single cat dad, you know, trying to make it in this tough world? Yes, he is. While Poonmaster Flex is out gallivanting around, somebody's got to take care of Wizwee. But is Pete still allergic to a room full of cats? Fucking A. Holy Christ. We also, you know, as a surprise. So one of the first dates that Poon Master Flex and I went on was one of the very first, I think probably the first date we had, was in my old apartment in this building downstairs. It was before I had bought a couch. And so the only furniture I really had was two stools, and then I had a bed. And at this time, I did not know Poon Master Flex that well. You know what I mean? Like, I knew her from work, but we hadn't hung out outside of work, really. And so we watched a movie. We watched Birdemic, Shock and Terror. And I made something that I call floor couch, which was I had a bunch of blankets and pillows and stuff, and I set them on the floor sort of at the base of the bed, right? Because I was like, well, I don't think I want to, like, you know, this is why I'm not good at the game. I feel like this is a total move just to be like, well, I don't have a couch, so I guess we could just sit on the bed, you know? But I was like, no, I will construct one out of pillows and blankets. And then, you know, one of our second dates was she went and helped me pick out a couch so that we would never have to have this situation again. But anyway, so we watched that, and then, you know, that's kind of become a thing for us. You know, we watch these terrible movies, right? And so she found a little movie called Fateful Findings by auteur Neil Breen. And so we went and saw that at midnight showing. There were about a dozen people there, and it was probably, no, it is without a doubt the best bad movie ever made. I challenge anyone to come up with a better one. And so for her birthday, it turns out Neil Breen had a new movie out this year, Pass Through, with a dash between pass and through. I did not know what it was about, and I did not bother to learn, because you can watch the trailers to his movies and learn almost nothing. And this is because there's almost nothing to learn, and at the same time, far too much. You know, when we watched, like, Fateful Findings, you know, is basically, if you imagine a ball of yarn being a normal movie, this is a ball of yarn made out of entirely different fibers, entirely different colors, and none of them are connected. They've just somehow been wadded into a vaguely ball-like shape that is close enough to be recognizable as a ball of yarn, but then as you approach it and experience it, it completely falls apart. And if you pull on anything, the whole thing unravels crazily. Pass Through is a movie. So I got that for Cassie. I made a floor couch, and we had, like, a, you know, kind of another first date. And Pass Through is a movie that makes it seem like Neil Breen, whatever he knew about filmmaking before, it's like every time he makes a movie, he wipes the slate clean and is like, forget everything you know about making a movie. And boy, if that's what he's doing, is he successful. So he, what is this movie about? Well, he seems to be some kind of creature from another time or space. There's a blue screen, green screen effect of a tiger that's in the movie repeatedly for no apparent reason. And he's obviously fell in love with the idea of taking these wide sweeping desert shots with a drone, because he has a drone mounted camera, and he'll stand sort of heroically, and I use that term very loosely, on a set of rocks and look into the distance and do a voiceover about, like, humans don't know, da 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 da, you know, and then the drone will be swooping around and shit. There appeared to be, if I can, as close as I can follow this, it appears that a group of people is immigrating from another country to the United States. Now, one would assume that this is Mexico, right? They're crossing a desert. They go through a fence, and they're in the United States. However, the casting of immigrants from Mexico and Central America, I believe there was, I would say less than 10% of the people were, appeared to be of any sort of, you know, Mexican or Central American origin. There, you know, there were a lot of white people, and there was a significant number of black people. So I don't know if this was him making a statement. I don't, you know, he was never specific, I guess. I mean, maybe this is an alternate reality Mexico America situation. Maybe they're not supposed to all be from Mexico. I have no fucking idea. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's not because of my ignorance that I don't know. It's because this movie is insane and impossible to parse. So these people come through, and two young women escape from the group, you know, which is, I guess, coyote types are bringing them across, and then they bring them to a house where they seem to be sort of held hostage, and these other two escape. And they find Neil Breen, who's living in, like, a rusted-out bus in the middle of the desert. And, of course, they're attractive. And in, like, an almost strippery way, maybe, one of the two especially, and, like, lends credence to this idea that I think Neil Breen may be hiring strippers as actresses. Also, I know he's based in Las Vegas, so that seems... You know, let's just call them performers, okay? Highlights. Let's do some highlights. One scene. Okay, I'm going to describe one scene in the movie that doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything else in the movie, just to give you a taste of what kind of things happen in this movie. One of the two girls who escapes to Neil Breen runs away, and Neil Breen and the other girl go to find her. She runs into a cave for no apparent reason, where there's these weird shadow effects happening, like in Fateful Findings. It turns out the shadows are being created by a guy who was a war veteran, and he wanted to live in this cave and be alone, just left alone. So he was creating these shadows in order to, you know, scare people off and make them think there were monsters in the cave. So, you know, this girl's in the cave, they find her, and she's like, he taught me how to make weird shadows. And you're like, okay. The guy emerges from the cave, and Neil Breen is there. And Neil Breen is some kind of weird, you know, future or whatever. He has powers. And Neil Breen just looks at him and says, you are now cured of your PTSD. And the guy's like, thank you, and walks away. Did we know he had PTSD? Did we know anything about this? Does this movie have anything to do with veterans? What the fuck? But that's the kind of thing you get. This movie also had very naked... Now, Neil Breen has not been shy about the fact that he fucking hates banks and attorneys and people with power and money. For whatever reason, he's got a big vendetta, you know, and there's a scene in the movie where he, as this sort of, you know, space Superman, goes to a fancy party, all of it green screen. You know, he's walking up to a mansion and it's clearly green screen. His clothes fade in and out from, you know, these shitty clothes he wears into a suit. And then he's standing around and, you know, here's the dialogue that happens, you know, in a Neil Breen imagination at like a rich society party. I work at the bank and I can spend money to make people vote however I want. Don't you think that's corrupt? And the second one is Neil Breen, by the way. I'm a politician. Companies can pay me to make decisions that affect everyone. Don't you think that's wrong to do? And then it just cuts back and forth. And the cuts in this movie, by the way, I know I'm getting probably too micro, but like the cuts in this movie are the typical bad movie cut, which is like, okay, don't cut to this person who's about to talk and then show them kind of setting up, getting ready to say their line, and then saying their line. You know what I mean? Here's what was mind-blowing about watching this movie. So we watched this movie, and then Poonmaster Flex was basically asleep, and we went back to her house, and I was sort of sick, half awake. And we had seen Kevin Smith the week before, and she's like, I've never seen Clerks. Can we watch Clerks? And I was like, sure. So we start watching Clerks. Now, Clerks, in a lot of ways, would be the equivalent of a Neil Breen movie, right? Like, Clerks was made for a super low budget at the time. I mean, now you could make Clerks with an even lower budget. But to shoot on film and do all that shit was a lot more costly at the time. But, you know, it was like kind of a one-man show. One person wrote the script, directed it, did a lot of the shit. And, you know, he had some help and some other people do some of the stuff. But for the most part, you know, it's a very personal auteur kind of piece, right? The level of competence between these two movies is fucking staggering, right? And you're like, this guy made Clerks when he was like in his 20s and, you know, just kind of decided to do it, wrote the movie, shot the movie, made a movie. This other guy is probably in his 50s, 40s, 50s, seems to have the money, seems to have the means, is hiring actors and stuff like that, has some sets, has some special effects budget. And I don't understand. I understand from Clerks where this movie came from, right? He's very explicit about, he's kind of like, I would go see movies and then I was like, how come nobody in movies talks about shit that I talk about, you know, Star Wars and sex and whatever. And then he saw Richard Linklater's Slacker and was like, I could do that. And so he did. Where is Neil Breen's movie coming from? Where do his ideas come from? When he's making a movie, I want to know, like, does he have, like, a scene in mind? Does he have a general plot? Does he just start go? It almost feels like he just starts going, right? And then kind of keeps going. He starts and doesn't stop, you know? We can't stop. That's how it feels. I'm not really sure what's happening, but that's certainly how it feels to me. So it was really a... boy, was it terrible. I would not rate it as highly as Fateful Findings, to be honest. I know that's a letdown. It was a letdown for me. It just didn't quite hit the same peaks, which are also the valleys. The highs are high, the lows are low. It's also, I'm so curious because Clerks is like, I don't know, 25 years old at this point. And Fateful Findings is like 2 years old. I am so curious what will become of Fateful Findings. Like, what would Fateful Findings look like in 25 years? If this is what it looks like today, if it looks very dated today, what is it going to be in 25 years? Yeah, it's not like the only test of something. But I just wonder, will we feel differently? Does it age better? Does it get worse? What's going to happen? I need to like set a calendar reminder for myself for like the 25 year anniversary and be like, so what do you think of Fateful Findings these days? You know, is it findable and fatefulable? And if you watch it again, what do you think? I have a Christmas topic that's a little, you know, probably not that exciting. But here's the thing. Christmas songs, right? I am not a fan of Christmas songs. Now, most people like one song or another or tolerate one song or another. I just am not a general fan. However, this year, there are two things that are really bothering me. Number one, the gym where I go in the weight room has been playing Christmas music for the last month or so. Now, when I'm in Target, I'd prefer not to hear Christmas music. I feel like there are plenty of options if that's what you want, and therefore it's not necessary. But if that's what they're going to do, so be it. I have to accept that I'm like, I'm engaging in commerce in the month of December in the United States of America. Are they going to probably play, da-na-na-na, Wonderful Christmas Time? Yeah, that's going to happen. Is there any need for it at the gym? Is there any reason for it? Is there somebody out there who's like, I can't get enough Christmas? Frankly, I have mixed feelings about the music in general. Like, I don't feel it's necessary. However, I also feel like maybe it's a good thing because it kind of muffles, like, the grunting and the, you know, panting and the gross shit. Is this why people listen to music when they have sex? Is that what's going on? They're like, muffles the noises that we don't need? Could be. You know, kind of like when my neighbor's playing annoying music and I turn the fan on the stove. And it just kind of blends into one white noise. I just don't understand, you know, like, who's bench pressing and wants to hear, like, Frosty the Snowman was a holly jolly jam. I'm not a believer in, you know, if you get on these bodybuilding websites, they'll be like, you need to listen to metal and Eminem's Lose Yourself. That's basically, and then there'll be some stuff on there that I don't even know what it is. I'm not a believer in that necessarily. I don't think you should listen to metal if you don't like metal, because that's not going to be very motivating. However, I don't know who wants to listen to Christmas music, and whoever wants to listen to Christmas music should just listen to fucking Christmas music on their fucking iPod, all right? It's not that hard. There are places we don't need Christmas music, and I'm putting the gym as one of those places. You know, we could crank it in the library if we wanted to. Why don't we? A, because we don't want to, and B, no one's asking for it. Is anyone at the gym like, hey, can you get some Christmas music going? And if anyone is asking that, you should revoke their membership immediately. Just being like, no, and you are not allowed in here. Here's the other thing. I have two songs this year that have made my new list of terrible songs, and they're very different. The first, I was in a Starbucks, typing away, as I do, and I had headphones in. I usually will have headphones in with nothing going because they kind of act as earplugs. You know what I mean? And I am hearing this sound that's like, it was a music sound and it almost sounded like something was wrong with the system there. Like there was a feedback or something. Turned out, no. This was the Destiny's Child version of Carol of the Bells. And like, I was describing this song to my office mate, and she used to work at Borders, right? And she was saying, oh my God, when that, there was a year that was on their playlist, right? Like they have like a, I don't know, 6-disc changer. So in Christmas, it's like they're playing all Christmas music. She's like, one year, there was one time we had an Enya sort of contest, like to see how long we could go, who would be the first to shut off the Enya CD, right? But during Christmas is Christmas music. And she's like, every Christmas song you can imagine, and there's only 6 discs, so you know, you'd hear almost everything twice in a shift. However, the one song that inspired somebody to go sprinting back to change the song, you know, anyone who was working there, someone would do this, was the Destiny's Child Carol of the Bells. This is a musical assault. Like, they are singing so passionately. And, you know, God love them for the passion. But it's just kind of like, you know how sometimes, like, you'll have someone like Christina Aguilera sing a national anthem, and you're just like, okay, let's take it down 10% here. That's a little outrageous. That's what you have going on with this. It is so crazily... Oh, If someone was like, I don't understand what the concept of over-singing is, because I'm not someone to critique that, but if someone was like, I don't know what you mean, I'd be like, I have a song for you to listen to. And it would be them singing about, "Little Silver Bells." And it's just so assaulting. It's crazy. It is crazy. I mean, listen to it. And there's a couple versions out there, but you got to listen to the one, I think it's from their Christmas album. I think they did a Christmas. It is nuts. The other one that I will talk, should I just pull it up? Is that how this probably needs to go? I mean, just so I can be sure we're all talking about the same thing. Destiny's Child, Carol of the Bells. Is that what I said? Was I saying Silver Bells? Now see, the first one that comes up is the wrong one. So you got to get to the one that shows them you know, all sitting around on the cover in like a Christmas tree area. Ugh. The video will play after this ad for something. James Franco is in the most hilarious movie of the year. It's playing now. Okay. Let's just... Sweet silver bells all sing to say, now, it doesn't start off so bad, but it's 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes, which is like a long time, right? Now let's move forward. Both home, to every home, to every... We're still not there. Now we're getting closer. Ding dong. That's when they talk about silver bells that it gets real out of control. There you go.
Here, bringing a cheer to young and old, weak and the bold. Ding dong, ding dong.
Good God. That, I cannot take that. That's too much for me. The other one, kind of from the opposite end of the spectrum, is there is a Bob Dylan Christmas album. And there's a song he's singing on there. They're all pretty bad. Because, like, Bob Dylan, not exactly known for his, like, vocal range. He's got a style, right, that we all can live with, but not a, not a vocal performer. I don't feel like I'm talking out of school to be like, I think the magic of Bob Dylan is probably more in his songwriting than his, vocal performance, right? He does these versions of Christmas songs that make me think he was basically trying to do an album to see if he was at a point in his career where no one would tell him no. Because he sounds like he's like, Bethlehem. And you're just like, this sounds like sort of Tom Waits transmitting through AM radio in hell. It is awful. I don't know why recording artists are making these Christmas albums so consistently. And I don't know why, like, what are they compelled to? And I just wish once in a while they would be like, oh, why did you do this? And they're always like, oh, you know, I just wanted to give my take on these classic Christmas songs, you know, I love the Christmas season. I wish they would just be like, so, Justin Bieber, why did you make a Christmas album? And he would be like, well, it took me like 2 days of studio work and I'll make a couple million bucks. So, that's why. Could I deny doing this for that price? Fuck no. And you wouldn't either. And I'd be like, you're right, I would not. I can't begrudge you that. For some reason, I just wish they would say that. You know, stop pretending that they're like, oh, because I love this music. It's like, no, you don't. Nobody does. Nobody does. Okay. Well, that's all we've got for today. I got to go be a cat dad, you guys. I got to go pet a Wiswi. Probably send a picture of her to Poonmaster Flex. Prove she's still fit as a fiddle. And all that jazz. So thanks for listening. I believe on our next episode, we'll have a guest. And we're looking at an episode coming up where we're going to have two guests and play a sort of newlywed game. So get excited for that. I think it's going to be a rollicking good time. And, you know, I'm not going to do like a fucking Family Feud guide and be inappropriate. Because it's like my brother, so I'm not going to make out with him or something. Be like, all right, let me give you a category, but first I'm going to touch your butt. Because he's my brother. If he wasn't my brother, let's just stop there. See you next time.